Chapter 3. Kinney strained to look directly up, his machine struggling to match his movements as it lacked a separate head unit. He could barely see the top of the high-rise blocks that loomed on either side of the street through his forward display as he trained gun barrels on windows. There were hundreds of darkened portals, all of which contained the threat of ambush. All it would take was for one disgruntled civilian to open up on them from any one of those crumbling facades, and it would turn ugly. The street was narrow, not wide enough for two heavies to pass abreast, and progress was slow. For some reason, civilians filled the streets, milling around in groups, congregating around their scrapyard collection of vehicles. There was a tension in the air, like the city was holding its collective breath. Raynor Kinney could barely stand it. "Citizens, clear a path!" Kronig boomed over external speakers up ahead. "Heavy mechanized units are in operation. You are at risk of serious injury." The miserable sergeant was tip of the spearhead, ensuring the street was clear for the big legs to advance. Kinney was behind him, offset to the left. His job was to cover the high areas, armor being vulnerable from above in built-up environments. Behind him, offset further, was Bader, covering the left flank. He would scrutinize every alleyway and side street. There were no end of rat holes and dingy areas where the mech simply could not go without smashing the place apart. Grayson and Braga mirrored their positions on the right side respectively, forming the spearhead formation. Behind First Squad, Wolfmother stomped forward slowly, scanning with methodical efficiency, each heavy footfall drowning out the sounds from Kinney's own suit momentarily and throwing up echoes that confused his audio-sensory gear. Second Squad followed the heavy, Anna Morante and her boys concentrating purely on flank protection in a box formation, with Anna at the center for ease of command. Eddie followed Second Squad, and Captain Commander Blake concentrated on juggling the mishmash of various comm signatures that were bouncing seemingly at random around the city. She could barely make sense of it since the relays usually weren't worth their weight, but it seemed there had been a terrorist attack in District 1. Gate power was being disrupted all over the city. How many dissident elements now had free rein of the city, with no means of controlling them? The thought was unnerving. "Be wary of these civilians," she repeated many times over the course of the patrol. "We have no solid intel, but be prepared to engage immediately." She hoped that it didn't come off as too aggressive in the eyes of Colonel Rome, but there was no way these people would be breaking curfew by coincidence. Bringing up the rear of the formation was Third Squad, commanded by Corporal Nito. He was covering their asses and would be active reserve should anything happen. "All call signs, this is Wolf Mother. We're coming up on the gate now." Rome had the best view of the area with his raised elevation and could now see the evidence of the hunter contact. Several small fires flickered in the steady rain, flames wickering fitfully against the water, and plumes of smoke rose from chunks of cooling metal.
"Squad 1, seen,"
Kronig replied a few seconds later. The unit broke cover of the closed-packed buildings and spread out into an extended line to bring their full firepower to bear on an even frontage. The open gate loomed ominously, its unlit highway leading into the dark, framed by the orange glow of a distant skyline. There was wreckage strewn everywhere. Bullet holes peppered the rough concrete floor and the perimeter wall, and shell casings littered the ground in all directions. Turning around to check rearwards, Kinney saw that a few larger chunks had been blown from the nearest buildings, exposing the rooms beyond to the elements. The private zoomed in and saw a meager mattress on the floor, next to which sat a small gas stove that had been knocked on its side. The blanket had been blown out of the room and hung limply from a jagged piece of rebar 2 stories below. The scene reminded Kinney of what he had to look forward to after his time in the service, and he turned away.
"Looks like we missed the fight, Sarge," Bader began.
"Shut up!"
Kronig cut him off before switching to the command channel.
"Eddie, this is First Squad. I think we've found the remains of one of our hunter call signs."
The second heavy mech was only now exiting the cover of the buildings, and she stomped towards the scene with caution. There was one reverse-jointed leg, the mangled outline of railgun plates, pointing mournfully at the sky, and not much else. The entire hull of the Buckmaster class had been blown out by some immensely powerful force.
It looks like it was hit by heavy weapons. The words hung heavy in the air. Mere small arms fire wouldn't put a dent in a mech the size of something as large as the Scout class. The implications didn't need to be said. The silence hung on for an awkwardly long period, punctuated only by heavy footsteps as Eddie approached the site. Kinney was about to ask Kronig what they should do when the commander spoke.
"This is Eddie. First squad, I need you to dismount and see if you can recover the black box from that hunter. All other call signs, form a ring of steel." A chorus of confirmations answered her in short order, and legs begun the well-practiced manoeuvres of shuffling position to cover their comrades.
"I'm dismounting. Kinney, cover me." Without waiting for a response, Sergeant Kronig popped his oversized power suit and stalked on foot to the wreckage. Kinney stayed close to the empty machine and watched as his sergeant clambered up the side of the broken hunter. Carbine in one hand, he hauled himself up with his other artificial limb. He paused at an opening, a huge hole edged with jagged steel that peeled outwards like it was a grotesque freeze frame of an exit wound in flesh.
"Look out, not in, idiot!"
Kronig yelled at the young private before dropping out of sight. Kinney cursed inwardly, then turned to cover back towards the direction of the buildings. He seemed to be the only one who saw the incoming projectile. It sailed slowly through the air, spinning and on fire, before hitting Nito's Mog and exploding in a cascade of flame. The brilliant blue of hard shields flared as the burning liquid struck, then that same liquid dropped to the ground, denied any surface to adhere to. A group of civilians cheered, while a small pack splintered off to light more bottles of homemade alcohol.
"Third squad here. Civilians are throwing firebombs at us. How do we respond? Over."
The reply was fast and assured, but it was not Blake.
"This is Wolfmother. Pop smoke at the civilians, they'll disperse,"
Rome ordered calmly. "We anticipated this. It's nothing more than a little civil unrest. There's always someone ready to take advantage of an unusual situation."
Canisters launched from discharges mounted atop Nito's hull, trailing streamers of smoke before hitting the ground directly at the feet of the firebombers. A thick grey cloud formed in seconds, and the angry civilians ran away, covering their faces with sleeves and the tops of shirts. One stoic individual stood amidst the torrents of suffocating smoke, screaming curses and gesturing wildly, until he too was under threat of being overcome. The cloud began to disperse, picked up by the wind and swept up above the level of the high-rises. It worked for a couple of minutes, but when it dispersed the group had grown considerably, and now they moved forwards again, a bit more tentatively this time. "Won't that smoke just act like a beacon to these guys?" Bader voiced exactly what Kinney was thinking. Some people with heavy gear were out there, and they wanted a fight.
"Shut up, Bader," Mirante crackled over the net. "Colonel Rome knows what he's doing. Maybe he's drawing them out. We got the big guys out this time."
"Yeah? Well, why aren't we looking for the other scout? Isn't that more important than securing this dead machine?"
"Show some damn respect, Bader." The words surprised Kinney, and he could hardly believe they came from his mouth. "One of our own has died here. We need to see what can be done." The squad net went silent again, and Kinney could practically feel Bader scowling at him. More firebombs sailed overhead, splashing down behind the third squad with the sound of smashing glass, accompanied by whoops from the crowd. There were now several pools of burning liquid in between Nito's unit and the rest of the formation, and Kinney was having difficulty separating the mugs from the flames on his display.
"Third squad, tighten up your spacing. You're in danger of getting separated," Blake ordered, sounding as though her thoughts were elsewhere.
The command net was alive with contradicting reports and static, and teasing useful nuggets of information out of the maelstrom put a huge burden on her concentration. It seemed now that the incident in District 1 was not an isolated occurrence, but without specifics, all Blake could do is furrow her brow and tell her troops to be ready. Again.
"What's taking Sergeant Kronig so long?" she wondered, before returning her attention to the scene unfolding in front of her. The first shot hit her front, the hard shield flickering briefly at her leg's knee height. The crack came a split second later, and her display went wild with icons. She cancelled them all as one of the mugs reported over the squad net, Corporal Mirante this time.
Shots fired! Shots fired! Firing points unseen!
Blake frowned. This was escalating quickly. The crowd had been emboldened by the previous fight here. How many of them, she wondered, had witnessed the death of one of her men? It made her angry. She had never lost a man before, not once, and she knew the reality of it had not sunken in yet. And these bastards were cheering.
Blake knew that the first round would be akin to opening a set of floodgates, and the heavies would be like magnets for incoming fire. The captain settled her mech into a hull-down position. The mighty machine hunkered down behind its heavily armoured forward leg armour, presenting less of a target to the unseen enemy.
Third squad only. Fire warning shots above the heads of the agitators. Be careful not to strike the buildings. And then she added, I want that crowd gone.
Kinney heard Nito firing. Single booming shots whipped above the heads of the rowdy citizens with deliberate delay between rounds fired. The corporal was demonstrating excellent discipline to be able to feather triggers and crack off single shots like that, though it was getting difficult to see both the mogs and the people they were warning. The firebombs were coming down like rain now. The crowd had a rhythm going, and before long, all the mogs could see were smoke and fire. Kinney risked a glance down at his diagnostics board. The internal temperature of the cockpit was rising steadily, and he shook his head in an attempt to remove the bead of sweat that threatened to run into his eye.
First squad, where are we on that black box?
Blake inquired. They had to move, needed to get away from the area and get some clarity from command. She couldn't do anything without understanding the bigger picture out here. Kinney waited, before realizing that it was he that had to reply.
I don't know. The sergeant is still dismounted right now. Over.
Well, find out!
The commander raised her voice, and Kinney responded by switching on his external speaker.
Sergeant, how long is it going to take to get that black box?
Instead of answering, Kronig appeared at the hole, a lump of mangled solid-state electronics cradled under one arm. He slid down the side of the ruined scout mech and sprinted the short distance to his power suit before leaping into it.
Eddie, this is first squad, we...
Kinney started before he was interrupted by a huge explosion. Corporal Nito's hard shield flickered briefly before going out with a pop, accompanied by the overwhelming tang of burnt ozone. It was a rocket, handheld, and Nito's squad could make out the trail from its point of origin, just as the second one hit. It was a perfectly timed attack. The firers must have known that the first rocket would knock out the shields of the small power suit, and the second smashed into Nito's cockpit as he reeled from the force of the first. The entire upper torso of the ancient Mog vanished in a cloud of smoke and twisted shrapnel, and the gutted machine slumped forward, as though it was tired and just needed to rest for a moment. A cheer erupted from the crowd. The squadnet went utterly silent. The shockwave had blown some of the flames from the firebombs out. It gave Kinney enough visibility to see the burning carcass of the venerable fighting machine that was, up until recently, driven by one of his most competent colleagues. Kinney had never experienced anything like it. He was unable to process what was happening. People didn't just explode like that. There had to be a sequence to someone's passing. Even mineshaft accidents left remains, and people expected those to occur. But this was so sudden, like something out of a dream that made no sense. Everybody was in shock, and even the officers froze.
Contact! Front!
Roared a voice over the net. Sergeant Kronig barreled through the flames, and he brought a firestorm with him. He strode forwards, firing machine gun, 25mm autocannon, and shoulder-mounted rocket launcher simultaneously. The front rank of rioters simply ceased to exist. Scores pitched over in plumes of pink mist as high-velocity rounds tore through them. Others exploded via hydrostatic shock as cannon rounds meant for armored vehicles detonated among them. Rockets arced overhead on flaming contrails erupted deep in the civilian ranks, flinging chunks of human meat into the air in expanding vertical columns of gore. Kinney snapped out of his stupor and followed his squad leader, the rest of the group sluggishly following behind, dropping into formation. Third squad still wasn't moving, so Kronig pushed past them and continued to pour fire into the now fleeing civilians.
Suppressing fire, clear the street!
Kronig barked orders,
unfazed by the death of his comrades and subsequent murder of civilians. "Prepare to pop smoke on my order." Kinney chorused confirmation with the rest of his squad, raised his machine guns, then stopped. The rest of the squad were firing, a hailstorm of tracer and cannon fire that decimated the mainly unarmed crowd, leaving a trail of broken bodies in its wake. The intensity of muzzle flashes distorted the air around the squad, and Kinney's air scrubbers whined as they failed to keep the smell of burnt cordite out of the cockpit. He could feel the vibrations through his suit, such was the immediate weight of fire First Squad put down.
"First Squad, Wolfmother, do you have the black box?"
It seemed that Colonel Rome had shaken off the shock.
"Affirmative, and preparing to pop smoke," Kronig growled.
"Stand by to break contact."
"Roger," Rome said, seeming to roll with this idea. "We'll advance northeast, use the cover of the train yard and circle back to Sector Command." The two surviving squad leaders relayed his instructions as Kinney grit his teeth and squeezed tighter on the triggers. He had a cluster of people in his sights. They had clearly underestimated the range of MOG machine guns, or were simply panicking as they ran away in a perfectly straight line down the road. Kinney thought of his upbringing and his brother, and how some of these people had simply been caught up in the excitement of something to break the monotony of their lives. He wrestled with the decision. Then it was no longer his, as the people disappeared into a side alley some 800 yards back.
"Martim's beard, that's rough," Bader exclaimed.
It was unlike him to invoke the saints, and Kinney could hear the smile in his voice.
"Pop smoke," Kronig said calmly.
Kinney fingered his secondary trigger on his left gun arm, and his carapace shuddered slightly with the thump-thump of canisters launching overhead.
"Ceasefire."
The carnage stopped almost immediately, the sudden, startling silence punctuated only by the sound of shell casings falling on concrete. The whole frontage was obscured for hundreds of yards almost immediately, as dozens of smoke rounds landed among the corpses of people that were cheering the death of a soldier mere moments before. Kinney kept his guns trained on the main street as the smoke built up.
"Second squad, move out," said Colonel Rome. "Followed by Wolfmother, then Third Squad, then Eddie, and First Squad bringing up the rear."
"Roger that," Anna Mirante said, her MOG already lurching off at a decent speed, following the perimeter wall north. The now leaderless Third Squad shuffled after Wolfmother in something resembling a box formation, but to Kinney, they clearly appeared to still be in shock. He knew that they looked up to Nito. He had always been fair and respectful to those under his command, regardless of their level of experience. As Kronig turned to lead First Squad away from the scene of devastation, Kinney had to think about the sergeant's reaction. He couldn't decide whether to be impressed or disgusted. Blake had frozen, plain and simple. She was disgusted with herself and frustrated in equal measure. She was lucky that Rome had been there to take command. It probably saved the situation from deteriorating further. But on the other side of the coin, how could he have faith in an officer that couldn't command? The numbness she felt at the loss of one of her scouts, and then unexpectedly one of her best NCOs right after, had manifested itself into a kind of rage that boiled internally, deep in her gut. It was late, too late though, and the rage was impotent as the platoon ran from any further threat. It made sense. The unit wasn't configured to fight in the tight confines of the streets. Separatists could rain fire down on them from above, and they couldn't react in that maze. Blake wanted to turn around and unleash hell. She could raise those buildings to the ground along with everything in them, but she caught herself and checked her anger before opening comms. She tried the radio again, focusing her mind and feeling the illogical rage quieten somewhat. Comms to Sector Command were choppy, but she had managed to get her message across, her voice shaking as they handrailed the decaying perimeter wall in order to get away from the heavily populated area. At least the relays were still good for something. No, she didn't need support just yet. And yes, she would get the rest of the unit back to base to regroup. It had been a mistake to leave the base without checking with Central first. District weren't answering either, and the sky was getting increasingly bright in the direction of their base over there. There was clearly some kind of mass civil unrest occurring. probably Corvid cell leaders taking advantage of their newfound freedom to sow widespread chaos among the districts. Blake decided to try again.
Central Command, this is Sector 78. Commander Eddy, we have been engaged by insurgents with small arms and anti-armor weapons and have broken contact. We are currently regrouping to base. What are our orders? Over.
Still that same interference, as though there was a kind of inefficient active jammer in operation.
Central Command, this is Eddy. Radio check. Over.
Nothing. Blake snarled in frustration and opened a private channel to Colonel Rome.
Wolfmother, Eddy, have you had any luck getting through to Central?
The cluster of antenna mounted atop the Colonel's heavy packed considerably more technical punch than Blake's own, and she figured he must have been trying different frequencies as she had.
I've got nothing here. Just the same interference over and over.
Blake nodded, even though he couldn't see her.
Was it too soon to bring up the fight at the gate? It might come across as insecure or lacking focus, but right now she didn't care. It had to come out.
Look, she started, about the gate contact.
I know, Rome cut in. Your man, Sergeant Kronig, really saved our asses back there. I froze up bad. No telling how it could have escalated without his intervention.
Remind me to write him up for citation when we get back in.
Well, she wasn't sure that she agreed with that. Kronig probably could have used a little less force. But damn Rome for doing that. How dare he be cool about it and just turn it into a non-issue?
No, that doesn't make it acceptable. I'm a leader, and I didn't lead. I was tested and failed at the first checkpoint.
Rome stayed silent for a bit, and Blake had nothing but the sound of her machine's thumping steps for company.
We lose men, Ed. It's always a shock the first time. Else it freaked me out, and I've been through similar situations before.
It was hard to read people when you could only hear their voice projected in poor quality audio from a speaker in a darkened cockpit. So Blake couldn't tell if he was being sincere or merely placating her so she functioned properly.
Probably both.
But the important thing is that we detach ourselves. It's hard, but it will save more lives in the long run. Think about your troops that are still alive, and we can talk about the dead ones when we're safely back at base.
He was right. They weren't out of the woods yet.
Wolfmother, Second Squad, when do you want us to break right into the train yard? Over.
Blake looked to her right and noticed that, indeed, they were at the old rail depot. Rusted cargo containers sat upon trailer beds, overgrown by weeds that had burst through the concrete to slowly reclaim the land. Blake also noticed that Corporal Morante had deferred to Colonel Rome instead of her.
This is Wolfmother. I think that maybe you should be asking your commander. Over.
Morante opened the channel for a moment, mumbling something before she responded.
Roger that, Wolfmother. Out to you.
Eddy, this is Second Squad. Shall we break right yet? Over.
Blake scanned her map board and made a quick estimate.
This is Eddy. Roger. Enter the rail yard now. Out to you, First Squad. How are we looking to the rear? Over.
Kronig's squad had dropped back a few hundred yards more than usual to give early warning of a follow-up attack from the rear.
If anything happens, I'll tell you. Out.
Blake was slightly taken aback. Kronig was usually so rigid. Dismissing an officer so easily seemed below him. She decided to let it go for now, and instead concentrated on watching her arcs as Eddie followed behind Third Squad, who were bunched a little closely for her liking.
Kinney didn't like how Sergeant Kronig had spoken to the captain. It was like a switch that had been flicked on in his squad after the little firefight. Or massacre, depending on how you looked at it. In Kronig, it had turned him into an even more extreme version of himself, and Kinney saw flashes of the psycho he must have been during the Troubles. He hadn't hesitated for a second when the rockets took out Nito. It was as if instincts that had long been at slumber had been awakened in him, and it scared Kinney how ready he was to fire upon civilians. Equally bothersome was how the rest of the squad had changed. After their first taste of battle, Bader and the others hadn't shut up about it. The squadnet was alive with chatter, the three of them excitedly recounting recent events with gusto. The transformation was alarming and sudden, especially from Bader, who grew up in the Deads alongside Kinney and Carlos. Kronig didn't chastise them for it, which wasn't normal. He had been utterly silent since they left the gate, apart from his curt reply to Captain Blake.
Oh, did you see that? I hit one guy as he was about to throw a firebomb. He fell over and the damn thing went off in his hand, turned him into a human torch.
Yeah, I saw it, Kinney replied.
What's the matter, brother? You sound pissed.
It's not that, said Kinney, trying to articulate what he was feeling. I'm just not comfortable firing at innocent civilians.
Bader turned to check the rear, pausing on Kinney's mug for a second as he turned back around.
Are you kidding me? They killed NATO. I'll kill every one of the bastards if I have to.
Bader got a chorus of encouragement from Grayson and Braga.
Your conscience is clear, Kinney, rumbled Kronig. Everybody else went quiet. So he noticed I didn't fire.
It's just that...
Stop talking, Kronig interrupted. This is just the beginning. It will get worse. If you won't fight, then you're dead weight. Don't be dead weight.
Feeling suitably chastised, Kinney didn't bother to respond. It would only make things worse. The whole squad felt more subdued as they made the right turn into the decrepit train yard.